Hi, I'm Lena.
And I'm Corinna.
And we're the Deductive Women.
We like to podcast on the Sherlock Holmes mythos.
And how it constructs gender and sexuality.
Today's episode is going to be about power and privilege in the modern-day BBC Sherlock series created by Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss. We've chosen the modern series because it most closely reflects the social dynamics of our world today. But we'll bring in Doyle canon on occasion for points of comparison. Since privilege involves more than just gender and sexuality, we're going to be expanding our normal area of focus to also look at issues of race, socioeconomic class, and ability. We'll start by focusing on Sherlock Holmes and John Watson's relationships to these categories, and then gradually look at how privilege affects other members of the cast. In addition, we'll take a look at Moriarty's relationship to privilege and how it factors into his characterization as a villain. And, listen up for a third voice, our sociologist friend Steve will be joining us for some of the discussion. So, grab your death frisbees and your shock blankets, and enjoy today's episode. Alright, so, today's episode, we are going to be talking about power and privilege, and of course, probably one of the questions occurring to you guys is, what is privilege? I mean, most of you are on the internet, presumably a lot of you know, but we thought we would lay down some definitions first, before getting into sort of the main ideas of our podcast. So, we thought we would have our friend, Sociology Steve, well, she's our resident sociology expert, talk a little bit about, offer some definitions of privilege and intersectionality and some of the stuff we're going to talk about. So, Steve, are you ready?
Yes.
All right. Say hi to everybody, Steve.
Hi, everybody.
Yes.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, I'm sociopathy Steve.
later on the podcast when you strap me to a Semtex. Or is that Lena? Stay tuned.
Okay.
All right. So, sociology, do you have, she went to college with me and she's a sociology major and
yes.
She's been reading through Doyle canon with me and yeah. Watching the series with both of us.
Yeah, I started out with the Guy Ritchie movies, and then I watched the TV show, and then I've been reading the books. So, I've kind of been doing this whole thing backwards.
That's okay. Just like consider it time travel.
No, that's Doctor Who.
Time Lord Steve.
Right. Alright, Steve, take it away. Give us our definitions.
I don't, like, have a definition of privilege, but I've always found it easier almost to think of, like, privilege as something you don't have to think about in your daily life, so
unpacking the invisible knapsack,
I believe, yeah.
Was the article that Peggy McIntosh wrote about white privilege.
Yeah, like,
strongly recommended.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I'll put a link to it.
Yes. Like, when people kind of get angry when they're told they're privileged, because I think people read as, like, rehearing, you have privilege in this area, as, like, you have no problems in your life, which is not true, but if you have white privilege, for example, you don't have to worry about things like going to the store and being followed around. Or if you have male privilege, you don't have to worry about like walking home at night. Like, all women generally have some sort of plan if they have to go home at night, like, you know, hold the keys in your hand, make sure you're parked in a non-sketchy parking lot.
We should specify that privilege is something that's granted by society as a whole, and it doesn't have as much to do with individual treatment.
Yeah, it's like, so privilege is something that's kind of encoded in institutional, like who gets hired and who gets accepted to college, who gets to go to college, who gets taken seriously when they speak about something. It's just like this society-wide thing.
Should we give some more examples about certain kinds of privilege that exist? Because we've mentioned white privilege, male privilege.
Cisgendered people over transgendered people. Straight people over queer people.
Yeah, like if you're gay. Just like the fact, like, you have to talk about your relationship. You often have to, like, say they instead of he or she. Until, like, you know someone won't, like, beat you up or whatever if they know you're gay.
Right, whereas if you have straight privilege, well, you can count, like, on your relationship being represented in the media.
Yeah.
In positive ways. Let's see, what else? Ability, and that talks
non-disabled people over disabled people.
Right, and also
and that includes both visible disabilities and invisible disabilities.
Oh, and upper class versus lower class.
Yes. Right.
Like, upper class, you generally don't have to worry about whether your kids will eat or whatever, or what they'll do with their life.
That's sort of like, what have we done now, six? It's like the big six. It's like race, gender, and gender identity, sexual orientation, ability, class.
Right. And it's also worth noting that when we talk about privilege, we're talking about it mostly in the Western context.
Yeah, I said that I mostly, when I was taught in school, it was mostly from an American context. So
right. Now, in many ways, I think Britain and America are very comparable. There's some differences.
Yeah, it sounds like race is different.
Race and class, obviously the class system is much more entrenched, but there's a fair number of similarities, though we do sort of have this disclaimer saying, you know, we're all American, so we might run into some walls ourselves, not quite seeing things the same way.
But we're open to being, like, told where our blind spots are.
Yes. Let's move on to intersectionality. Let's talk about intersectionality, because I think when we talk about privilege, it becomes really easy to turn it into oppression Olympics, and we don't want to do that. So, Steve, take it away.
Should we explain first what we mean by oppression Olympics?
Well, I think privilege, like, that's oppression Olympics is just, like, ranking who's more oppressed than who.
Right. Yeah, like, if you've got a white woman talking to a black man and they're arguing, well, I'm black, well, I'm a woman, so they disagree. Who's more disadvantaged? That's oppression Olympics.
Right. When that just kind of gets you stuck.
I think. When you start adding up your privileges, like, well, I'm less privileged than you in this way, and this way, and this way.
There's not actually a math equation that you can
Or even, like, the whole, like, my ancestors were, like, whites who immigrated from Ireland, so clearly I know about racism or experience racism, so I'm just as oppressed as you are is another version of oppression. Oppression Olympics.
Yes.
Yes. So we don't want to compete in the Oppression Olympics, which leads us to the point about intersectionality. We like intersectionality. It's a good buzzword.
Yeah, it's trying to, like, understand various social constructs as they relate to one another. So, like, a black woman's experience with feminism will probably be pretty different from a white woman's, for example, because, you know, because, like, white women have to deal with the whole, like, angel of the household thing, like, being, like, this, like, idealized perfect mom, and then black women tend to get degraded.
Right, and then you get class taken into the whole idea of feminism, because when you have middle or upper class feminism, that's feminism. Well, you know, you're talking about the woman wants to be able to, the right to go out and work. And
where some women have always been working.
Right. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, in working class situations, women have always had to work because you need two incomes.
Or, like, classes, it, like, intersects with homosexuality, like, because upper class LGBT kind of are on the gay marriage thing, and, like, you have the poorer people who, like, get kicked out of their homes and kind of just want to have a safe place to live.
Right.
And then, because class is so closely tied with race, that also often reflects on what the queer community of color...
Actually, I brought LGBT up, and T, like, trans people tend to have, like, this whole host of other issues that are completely different. Not completely different, but often ignored.
Yeah.
In relation to the LG part.
Yeah. They even have even less visibility.
Right, right. So, and then I guess that may or may not tie into ability, because so many issues are related to the body and the relationship between the mind and the body. So basically, I think the picture we're trying to paint is it's complicated.
Yeah.
We're going to try and take a lot of interactions into advantage. And Sherlock, in a way, is sort of a fascinating show because there's actually a lot of intersectionality. There's a lot of odd relationships between,
even if we're not sure if the show is doing that on purpose or not.
Yeah. Right.
Well, they should pretend that they are, and then make
because it makes it a much better show.
Yeah.
Right.
Even if it's not, though, it's definitely worth examining.
It's really fun to talk about. Like, I talked about this on Tumblr. It's one of my favorite canons, like, fandoms in recent years, just because it's so rewarding to analyze.
Which is, in a way, sort of, I feel, is almost a homage to Sherlock as a character. Because he likes to look beyond. I mean, he's almost the paradox of Sherlock as a character, is he likes to look beyond the surface, but then he also puts together a lot of his ideas from generalizations.
Like a sociologist.
Yeah.
I wish you could see the way I'm stroking my non-existent beard.
Is it a Seneca Crane beard?
Oh god, I wish.
We can Photoshop you with one.
No, we should Photoshop it on Lestrade.
Accurate. All right. So are we good with our definitions?
Yeah. Oh, I feel okay with it.
Okay, fabulous. Let's move on to the next part. So to begin our analysis of privilege in the BBC Sherlock series, we thought we would start by taking a look at our main characters, Sherlock and John, and talking about the ways in which they are privileged and the ways in which they aren't. True to the theme of intersectionality, they're neither completely privileged nor completely disadvantaged. So we're going to do this a bit like the pro-con lists that we had in the Irene Adler episode. Anyway, I'm going to start first, and then I'm going to make Lena talk, but I was going to talk about Sherlock. Sherlock has privilege. Well, he's white, he's male, and he's definitely upper class. Lena, you read the Where Sherlock Tumblr, right? Can you give me, like, citations on how much his clothing costs? Because, no.
Well, his coat costs, like, somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 pounds.
Right, right.
And everything they wear in that show costs a lot of money, actually. But that's not really your point, sorry.
Yeah. Well, okay, so even if everything on that show costs a lot of money, his coat looks like it could be expensive.
Yes. Like, the scarf is vintage. You can't even buy the scarf. So I don't even know how much it's worth. It's probably cashmere.
Oh, dear God. Like, you conceivably could say that, like, John has an aunt knitting him those sweaters, so... Are we sidetracking? Anyway, Sherlock is definitely upper class, and you can also tell by his accent. Well, and I think we're supposed to assume that the Holmeses are traditionally in the original books. It's kind of... Well, he has to support his consulting detective habits somehow.
And his other habits, if we're talking about canon.
Right. And presumably he's getting the money from somewhere, so family money seems a possibility. It can't all come from Mycroft being the government.
Right.
Right. In conclusion, white upper-class male, even if he doesn't always... You know, and that would also mean that he got a really decent education, though...
Mm-hmm.
How Sherlock interacted with that education, we can't exactly say. On the other hand, he does lack privilege, we can assume, because, okay, I read Sherlock as neuroatypical, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know exactly, you know, if he has a diagnosis or what it is, but he's clearly not, he doesn't fall into the neurotypical category.
Yeah.
I would also call him a queer character. I will probably call everybody in Sherlock a queer character at some point, because I just said that about Irene. No, but really, I mean, especially in first season, especially with Moftis saying, oh yeah, he's totally asexual, which, you know, admittedly they went back on later.
The fact that no one, the creators or the actors, can make up their mind about what Sherlock's sexuality is kind of points to queer.
Right, right. Well, and I consider asexuality under the queer umbrella, so mm-hmm. that would count the fact that no one knows. And
yeah.
It's a question for people in the show, too. It's not just, you know, the creators of the show sitting around speculating. It's John and Mrs. Hudson saying, like, has he ever had a relationship?
Right.
And with anyone of any gender, it's just not known. I guess to sort of go back to the neuroatypical, and this is, I don't know if this is privilege so much as, or disadvantage so much as a side note, but the ways in which Sherlock is unusual, possibly, you know, we do get a sense that he may have been a survivor of childhood trauma related to, like, bullying in school and stuff, mm-hmm. stuff that might have interrupted the education that he got, or he might have been ostracized as a child, and that may still affect him. This is all speculation, because obviously we don't know his past.
We know that everyone hated him in college.
That's true! We have that as a concrete example, that he had no...
Sebastian Wilkes!
Lena hates him. To be fair, I do too.
Sebastian Wilkes deserves to be punched in the face.
Moral of this episode. So the parts where Sherlock lack privilege, they're really only speculation. Aside from the line about university, we don't have explicit confirmation. On the other hand, there are things that I sort of prefer to be true in my interpretation of Sherlock as a character, because I find it more interesting if there's these things that are out of his control that are affecting his life. You know, not that I want him to go through trauma, but it does it means you have a character who's not just, oh, look at me, I'm an upper-class white male, I can do whatever I want, la-da-da-da-da.
Right.
I'm an asshole to people. And I think if you sort of take away the whole, like, neuroatypical, possibly queer kid who possibly got ostracized, then you're just...